everybody, welcome to a new installment of the Stew Pod, the Yahoo Sports Baseball Podcast. I am Mike Oz.
And I am Chris Swick.
Chris, man, it is trade deadline week. I know I haven't really slept a lot, but I'm sure there's some people in baseball that have slept even less than me. It is madness out there.
Things are heating up. The stove is hot, as they say.
Yeah. I played, in my effort to talk more about the intro music of the show, I played the Ghostface Killah Black Jesus instrumental because it's like one of the most epic rap beats I can think of, and this week is just so epic. Like I feel like I need that beat in my head to just kind of keep going every day.
And I thought you were gonna say you played the latest version of whatever baseball game and made a bunch of trades in anticipation of the trade deadline.
Nah, man, I'm making it a point to talk about rap beats now.
Okay, fair enough.
That's what I got going on. So we're doing all trade deadline this week. We have a very special guest joining us for, I think, a really cool segment. Dan O'Dowd, the former GM of the Rockies and a baseball executive for a long time, is going to talk to us all about the kind of behind the scenes of how the trade deadline works from the front office standpoint. And just so happens, he has some unique perspective on the biggest trade of the week so far. And Chris, I know we have some other good stuff lined up, so go ahead and tell the people.
We do. We're going to talk about that big trade from this week. Tulowitzki reactions from both of us. And then, like you said, we're all about the trade deadline, so we got to talk about some of the deals that have happened so far, which ones we like, which ones we think still need to happen, and which teams really need to start making moves or else they're going to be in trouble. So that's kind of what we got on the schedule.
It is a pivotal week in baseball, and we hope you enjoy this podcast. It's the Stew Pod. We are back on the Stew Pod, the Yahoo Sports Baseball Podcast. I'm Mike Oz with Chris Swick, and have a special guest with us to talk all about the MLB trade deadline, Dan O'Dowd, the former GM of the Rockies, also spent time as an executive with the Orioles and the Indians. These days, he is on MLB Network, and you can see him all over your TV this week talking trade deadline, including a special MLB Tonight trade deadline edition they're doing Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern, which I'm sure we'll have lots to talk about the way things have been going the first couple days. So, Dan, first of all, thanks for joining us. And I want to start with the big topic everybody's talking about, the Troy Tulowitzki trade. I think you have probably a unique perspective on this one, having been with the Rockies for so long. What was your reaction when you heard the news?
First of all, Mike and Chris, thanks for having me. You guys do a great job, and it's my pleasure to be on the show with you. I think, like everybody else, I wasn't shocked that Tulo was traded. I was absolutely shocked that he got traded to the Blue Jays. I did not see that coming. So that's the beauty of baseball. That was a wow trade right there for me.
So the Blue Jays in particular, I mean, that it was surprising that it happened now. I mean, was, when you were still with the team, were they even kind of a club that you had ever considered trading Tulo to? Or was
this really
just...
didn't, but simply because they had a shortstop that they had traded for from the Marlins, and he was committed to a lot of dollars, and I just never saw them as a match. So we really never got below because, anytime that we looked at it, the two things I was looking at, of course, anytime you make a trade of a star player, you're looking for impactful, young, controllable players moving forward. And the second greatest currency in the game is payroll flexibility. And so with Reyes there, I never looked at that as a fit because of the second part of the, if he had to come back, he wouldn't have allowed any payroll flexibility.
I don't really ever like doing the who won the trade stuff, especially, within 24 hours. But
right.
How do you assess the return from Colorado's standpoint? Like, what was your thought?
Well,
thought?
All three arms, Hoffman in particular, he's got big-time ceiling on his arm. So does Ozuna, so does the other kid. But, Castro, and then so does the other kid. But we're not going to know for 2 years. Hoffman's in Double A having okay success. It's really early to evaluate it since he's coming off Tommy John. Castro sitting in Triple A with, kind of marginal success with great ability. The other kid's having a really good year at A ball, but it's A ball. So I think we'll have a better feel a year from now, and we'll have a better feel 2 years from now. I'm sure the Rockies did this because they feel all three of those arms are going to be impactful, and they really covet the payroll flexibility moving forward beyond the last 2 years of Reyes's deal. I'm sure from that perspective, you know, their evaluators and their analytical people were sold on the three younger guys, and, you know, again, they were trying to get to that point of payroll flexibility 2 years from now.
Hey, Dan, you've mentioned payroll flexibility quite a bit. I'm wondering if maybe that's one of the more underrated things that maybe a casual fan doesn't notice about these type of deals.
I think it is, guys. Okay. Yeah. You know, I think payroll flexibility, what it does, it allows you to make decisions at any point in time to add assets to your organization that may be undervalued somewhere else, like a guy that's on a big contract that's, you know, somewhat performing, a club can't afford. If it just puts you in a position to make quick decisions, you know, and it doesn't matter your market size. You know, even teams like the Yankees with a $250 million payroll, they don't have a ton of flexibility because they have all of those long-term, you know, contracts that they're committed to. They're working really hard to bring along some younger core players so they get back to the point of flexibility. Look at the Dodgers in that trade at Kemp. You know, they ate almost all the money this year, but moving forward, they get flexibility out of his contract. So every club in the game values payroll flexibility because it allows you to make impactful decisions on talent when talent becomes available.
I want to get a little general here and just get some insights about how the trade deadline works as a whole. And I guess first thing, if you're a GM who's, you know, active this week, how crazy is it? Like, how much sleep are you getting? How much information is coming your way? Just how do you assess, like, how wild of a week this is?
Yeah, the winter meetings and the trade deadline week are very, very similar. It's high adrenaline rush. It's hyper-focus for long, long periods of time. It's a very quick processing of information. So your internal process has to be really sound because you got to digest information relatively quickly and then react to it accordingly. And it's a great opportunity this week to use your creativity because sometimes when you need to get things done, it's not just always the one-for-one thing that can get it done. So you've got to be really, really creative in your ability. And then on top of that, you've got to manage all your internal needs, meaning your owner's got to be in the loop every step along the way, and then your field staff has got to kind of be in sync with you. They've got to be aware of going on, what's going on, because ultimately at the end of the day, they got to buy into what you're doing so they can implement what you're doing. So there's a lot of balls to juggle. Your pro scouting director in particular, this is really his time of year. He and his staff, you know, they got to bring their A game really pretty much every day. But this goes, you know, a long period of time goes into preparation for this. And many conversations are had way before, prior to getting to this week. So you got some really good idea of what's out there and what you're capable of doing. But you have to stay in constant contact with the clubs because as it shifts and changes, you got to be aware of it, guys. Even for a club you may not match with, you need to know what their needs are because in a deal you've got going on, you may be able to fill one of their needs and in turn get an asset from them that you covet along the way too. So you really have to have a good feel for what everybody's doing, not just the clubs you're in direct matches with.
Hey, Dan, I'm wondering if you can give us an idea of how these trades get initiated. Are you texting other GMs, you know, emails,
phone calls?
Yeah, social
media has replaced a lot of phone calls, which used to drive me crazy because, you know, the personal touch for me, I think you just read into a lot of what's going on within a person just by talking and listening to them. So some GMs of the modern nature, it's texts and emails, and some of the more experienced nature, which I was, it's more phone calls. But, you know, it always starts with a thought. Everything great in life starts with a thought. And you have a thought, and like anything else in life, if you've got a good working relationship with your other GMs, you know, and it's you should be comfortable to share that thought. Most of the time it doesn't go anywhere, but that's usually how deals get done. It always starts with someone coming to you with a thought or you going to someone else with a thought. And let me say this, too. You have other people involved. So your assistant GM may have a great relationship with other GMs or other assistant GMs. So a lot of times you are running a parallel course with clubs. It's not just you making the calls all the time. And then you have your scouts out there, and your scouts are touching base with other scouts from other organizations and providing information back to you too. And then we live in an age, you know, that you put such factual information out there that you are constantly studying all the media wire reports out there for something that may come along that you just quite honestly didn't think of yourself.
You're very nice to compliment all of the journalists, because I
Well,
know sometimes it's not all right.
some of it may be fiction, but even fiction can turn into a good idea.
Well, I want to quickly just kind of touch on that because, it seems like some of the information out there, GMs now or people in with teams can kind of manipulate that. Is that something that happens? Is that part of the game?
No, they'll never manipulate
Come
the information, of
on.
course. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. There's trial balloons put out there all the time just to see how people are going to react and see if it spurs some interest or even the asking price on players. So, you need to be really aware of the fact that you could be getting manipulated from time to time. Ultimately, at the end of the day, guys, the most important thing is you need to know your own players. And you need to know what you have and you need to know what you don't have. And though you may not know, you can study all the analytical work in the world. When you acquire a player, I guarantee you something about that player, good or bad, will come up that you did not know. But it's inexcusable not to know your own players and know what you're trading, or know what you're keeping. And you just have to, at the end of the day, you have a group of guys that, probably under no conditions are you going to trade, and you better be right on that. And then you have a group of guys that you feel comfortable moving, and you better be right on that.
So let's say you're talking to somebody, one of your guys comes to you with something, and you get something, and you're like, okay, I kind of like this. I'm interested in this enough to pursue it.
Right.
What are the next steps, and like how quickly does all that happen?
Okay. For me, the next step would be, okay, which team is it with? And then who has the best relationship contacts with that team? It may not be me. I may not have a great working relationship with that GM, but the assistant GM may have a great working relationship with that assistant GM. Or the pro scouting director may have a great relationship with that pro scouting director. And so, our group was being assimilated all the time. I eventually brought all of our pro scouts into the office, so they were there the entire week. We had a war room set up. And so we were constantly throwing ideas and bouncing ideas up off the board. We had all the teams' depth charts up, and so we knew what everybody's strengths and weaknesses were. And we studied those, all the time, knowing, where people were susceptible to needs and maybe where they had a little bit of excess. And so it would start with a contact, and then the contact would lead to a thought or an idea. And then if the thing had legs and a heartbeat, then we would start to matriculate it along as much as we possibly could. And then eventually I would call if I didn't make the first call to their GM directly and or the president of baseball operations, whoever it may be, and say, okay, now where are we at with this from your perspective? What can we do from your perspective here? And, try to take it to the next level.
I look at the trade deadline in some ways like last night I'm looking at things, and in some ways I just visualize like a game sometimes, like a board game, like the game Rubik's Cube. I don't know if you ever played that game, but I look at that
Yeah,
and I'm like,
where you move all the pieces
yeah,
around.
like how do
Yeah.
you okay I have these right here, but I could take that apart and move this piece over here and do that over there. Is there a game to you like that?
I think I looked at it more like a jigsaw puzzle.
Okay.
And, you have this 40-man roster, and then you have your entire organization laid out on the floor, and you're trying to put little pieces together consistently to make the best jigsaw puzzle you possibly can, both from an impact now standpoint and a depth standpoint moving forward, because clubs don't win without depth anymore. I think the average number of players used at the major league level this year is 45. And so you need a lot of depth to be able to, sustain the attrition that you feel through the course of the season. And I think the trading deadline's exciting. Let me tell you this, though. The other day I looked at the 2010, 2011, 2012 trade season because we're far enough out from that to realize, really what did happen. And there were over 100 trades that took place in July. I just said July 1 through July 31st. There were only four impact players of all those prospects that were dealt that ended up being, like real guys at the big league level. And I don't remember. Patrick Corbin was one of them. And there are a few other I don't remember off the top of my head, but four. And
Yeah.
so to me, there was a danger at the trading deadline of over-evaluating younger players. Because the deeper you go within a system, meaning the lower you go, the greater risk there is that that player will never impact your big league club at all. And so for me, what the Rockies just did, for an example, that's some risk right there. I mean, there's risk in every decision you make, but there's risk gambling on young pitching in this game that still have warts that need to get better in some areas. There's a lot of risk involved in that. But, you know, ultimately you don't win without pitching. It's the hardest commodity to get. Colorado, you're really never going to sign as a free agent, so you got to trade for it. You need to draft and develop it within your own organization.
What role does the internet play in this? I'm thinking mostly Twitter. I can see how the fans really appreciate the constant updates, but I'm wondering if it's a huge pain for executives.
You know, I wasn't, you know, that didn't fall in my domain. I wasn't a Twitter guy, and I didn't really pay attention to what was being said on Twitter. You know, there are so many outside influences, I think, that can change the direction of a trade and change the direction of an organization. I just try to keep all our guys focused on the task at hand to make the best decision we could possibly make without too many outside interferences, which include, I mean, we look through Twitter and, you know, the electronic media for information, but I didn't really look at it to validate opinion in any way, shape, or form, because too much information can just paralyze an organization. And I've said this all along, there's three decisions that are good decisions to make. One, it's the right decision. The next best decision to make is the wrong decision. But sometimes the worst decision to make is no decision at all, because you just can't move your organization forward.
Does it matter at all if, like, let's say you're close to making a deal, or you're, you know, maybe somewhat close, and then, you know, one of the MLB experts out there writes a story that says, yeah, this is happening. Does that ever, you know, really make it fall apart, or is that just kind of...
It does. Okay. Yeah, it does, because some people are susceptible to that. You know, there's only so many things in life you can't control. In fact, I think all of us overestimate how much we actually do control. And what people are going to, you know, say, think, you know, do say or think about anything we're doing, I've got no control over at all. And so there, a lot of times there's misinformation that goes out there, and it can blow up a deal, especially if the other club feels like you're trying to manipulate the information to get it out there. And that's where authentic relationships in our game are more important than normal relationships in our game. Because if you're dealing with a club and there's no trust that's consistent in your workings and dealings, more than likely you're not going to get a deal done.
Dan, how are you enjoying kind of being on the other side now? Do you miss the rush of this week, or are you enjoying being an analyst at this point?
You know, I mean, I certainly love my period of time in Colorado, but it was definitely time for me to move on. That's a very challenging position for 15 years, intellectually stimulating, but, you know, at times, you know, beyond intellectually stimulating, at times a feeling of I don't know what to do next type feeling. And so I don't miss that feeling. You know, I think I love what I'm doing. I miss some of the interpersonal relationships that you establish within an office and the team building environment that goes on. They certainly have that here at the network. It's just a different role for me within that. I'm a line worker here. I'm not a person in position of leadership in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, that part of it, you know, believe it or not, I do miss. I don't miss the losses and you know, how it rips your heart out at times. And I don't miss necessarily the fact that it's, you know, for 32 years, it's been a 24/7 job. And the quality of life within a front office is, you know, it's very difficult on your family.
So more sleep this week than in years past at this time?
Yeah, I mean, I get to comment on all of these trades, but I don't have to live with the results of any of these trades, which is, you know, it's a big difference, you know. Now I'm an expert. I was an idiot when I ran the Rockies. Now I'm an expert. How comical is that?
Hey, well, thank you for taking us inside and explaining to us some of how it actually works out there, and we really appreciate the insight. Welcome back to the Stew Pod, Yahoo Sports Baseball Podcast. I am Mike Oz.
And I am Chris Swick.
Yeah, we don't usually do that there, Chris, so I'm glad you jumped up on there. Thanks to Dan O'Dowd for joining us again to talk about a lot of stuff that happens at the trade deadline. It was very interesting to me to learn, you know, how it is from that side of things. I want to talk about one thing that all of baseball is talking about that we talked about with Dan, but I think it's a good topic still. Chris, what was your reaction to the Troy Tulowitzki trade, which was the biggest news of the week so far?
I'm still picking pieces of my brain off the floor. I was pretty shocked by the whole thing, and I'm not even necessarily talking about whether it's a good deal for either team, but just the fact that Troy Tulowitzki and Jose Reyes were involved in the same trade just kind of threw me off, kind of screwed my whole night up, and it's probably going to screw my whole week up.
I just don't understand I mean, I get it. If you have a chance to get Troy Tulowitzki, you go and you get Troy Tulowitzki, and you know it's not a short-term deal for the Blue Jays, so you know I understand that. But I just all the talk of like how the Blue Jays need pitching, the Blue Jays need pitching. That's all we've heard for I don't know 6 months now, and then they go out and they get Troy Tulowitzki, and I'm just like, okay, I guess. But where's the pitching at? You know, that lineup is stacked. I mean, the lineup looks like something that you would do in a video game or in fantasy baseball or something, and just you know. Love it, but I still feel like, and I picked them to win that division. I just still feel like they need a pitcher, man. Go get Jeff Samardzija or something. I mean, I feel like he's a good choice for them. So hopefully, this is not my deal that needs to happen that we're going to talk about later. But geez, man, go get some pitching.
I don't know. It doesn't bother me as much. I mean, you still got to keep Aaron Sanchez, Daniel Norris in the trade. Neither of those guys have pitched necessarily all that well, but they're definitely part of the future. They could be part of the second half for the Blue Jays. I agree that, you know, you'd like to see them go out and get a pitcher and strengthen that rotation, but I think, like you mentioned, the big thing for me is that Tulowitzki is going to be under contract, so this is not a rental-type deal. I mean, this was a long-term move, and I don't know, man. In my mind, he's undoubtedly the best shortstop in the game when he's healthy, so to add that to your stable of hitters, I mean, that's just a scary lineup at this point.
Yeah, I'm there with you, man. But I also look at it like now's the time. That division is weak. You know, this is your chance to go and make a move and make the playoffs and take that lineup into the postseason and see what you can do, you know. And I guess I would – they still have time. They still have time to make a deal. But I guess I would just be disappointed if, you know, they have the opportunity and they don't go after it.
So it sounds like what you're telling me is that this is not your favorite deal of the trade deadline thus far.
Not my favorite deal. And actually, I would probably say my favorite deal is a little bit of the inverse there, which is the Kansas City Royals going out and getting Johnny Cueto, and I guess to a lesser extent, Ben Zobris. But I'm going to pick Johnny Cueto because, you know, the Royals are a team who are saying, like, yes, this is our window right now. We have the opportunity. The Tigers, you know, we're having a down year. This division is all ours. We're doing really good. What do we need? We need an ace, and we need, you know, a Ben Zobrist type player, somebody who could play second base, I think, in the long run. But they need, you know, some help in the outfield, so he can help them in two ways. And they just went out and did it. I mean, they made it happen. They went and got the guys that they needed the most. They didn't go and get, like, the second-tier guys. I mean, they went out and got what they needed, and they're going for it. And above anything else, I respect it, and I respect it when it's a team like the Royals, who aren't traditionally, you know, your big spender or, you know, your team that goes out and makes that kind of move. And so, as much as I think I've said mean things about Royals fans in the past, I am happy for them that their team is going out and making the deals it needs to.
I still think the Tulo deal is my favorite deal. Just, I mean, you get a chance to get a player like that, you have to, regardless of what your immediate needs are. And, you know, I love the Royals going out and getting Cueto and Zobrist, but those guys are going to be off the team next year. So that's really what pushes the Tulo thing over the top for me.
I think you also need to share with the people, Chris, your actual reaction when this happened. Like, you weren't, first of all, you were not working when the deal happened.
I can't even say what I said on the podcast.
You just turned in like I wish that I could have seen the reaction video of you freaking out. Like, you've been like those kids who, you know, the video of those kids who get like the Nintendo 64.
The 64, yeah.
Yeah, that was like you.
Just in it was well, because we really had no warning that this was happening, and then suddenly,
yeah,
it was, you know, boom, Troy Tulowitzki to the Blue Jays.
Everyone's, you know, like, what? Huh? What?
Yeah, right. I mean, Tulowitzki, you know, a huge player. And then, I don't know, I think the Blue Jays have been a really interesting team to me. I've watched a lot of them this year just because their offense is so good.
And Josh Donaldson is the man, right?
Right. So to add all of that kind of together, that it was just really exciting to me. And, you know, it's always exciting when a giant move is made, you know, when we least expect it. I think it broke here like at 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night, and you and I are on the West Coast. So it was even later for everybody else, and you're just kind of, you're trying to fight sleep off, you know, waiting for all the other details to come out. So
yeah, our boy Ian, who writes on The Stew, he lives in Toronto, you know, covers the Blue Jays pretty regularly. they didn't know until this morning, you know, because they were all already sitting over there. So that's got to be pretty neat, though, too. Wake up and you'd be like, oh, you got Troy Tulowitzki, huh? what the heck just happened? So that was neat. So let's talk about the other side of the trade deadline now, Chris. What deal do you think is the deal that still needs to happen for a team, you know, whether it's trying to solidify the roster for the postseason or just, you know, trying to make the best of an opportunity right now?
All right, so we've talked about Kansas City making big moves to bolster their team, and they've kind of become the favorite in the AL at this point, I would say. I'm looking for a team to do the same in the NL, and I think the Pittsburgh Pirates have a chance if they can get themselves another legitimate hitter. I would love to see them go in on a guy like Justin Upton because, you know, the National League, the Nationals have been pretty good, but they've got some issues, man. They can't get all the way healthy. The Dodgers definitely need some help in that rotation. I feel like, you know, between those three teams, whichever one makes that next big move, they could really solidify themselves. And I think I want to see Pittsburgh do it just based on, you know, the fact that they've been building towards a deep playoff run the last couple seasons. They've come close. They've made the playoffs twice and been knocked out. You know, this is it for them. They can really, with one big move, they can really put themselves in conversation for the NL favorite, I think.
Ooh, I like that. I like that, Chris. That's a good one. And we haven't heard much about the Pirates or anything.
No, so no.
I like it. Good job. Well done.
Thanks.
I'm going to go with the Dodgers, though, just because I feel like they're a team who, as I've said before, I think to some degree they have underperformed, but they're, you know, still kind of doing well. And I think if they can get it all together, you know, if they can get their players all functioning well. I mean, we got Kershaw now who looks like he's quote unquote back from all the, you know, semi struggles that he had earlier in the season. You know, if Puig can not get traded and kind of, you know, regain his Puig of the past, and if they go out and get another pitcher, I mean, that team is dangerous, cuz look how good they've been in terms of like the standings while playing, you know, relatively I would say disappointing baseball. So you know, they're in a position where they can pretty much go out and make any deal they want. So if they go and get Cole Hamels, I mean, that would just be, I mean, that would just kind of like, you know, turn the whole thing wide open. But I'm also curious, as I wrote last night, like, you know, if they have the opportunity to trade Puig for Cole Hamels, like, you know, do they do that? And, you know, that could also, you know, impact things for them. But I think in the next few days, they're going to be the team that I'm watching and waiting for something to happen from.
Well, I feel like, I mean, this is a dangerous place to go because there are still a few more days. A lot of trades are going to be made. So this question is going to come back to bite one of us or probably both of us. But what team is going to be the trade deadline dud? What team either is not going to make the move that they have to, or is going to maybe improperly value the players they already have?
Well, I think at this point I'm looking at the Mets, because I feel like the Mets are a team that were in the position that you were talking about, like with the Pirates, like they could make the one move and it could really make the difference for them. But it doesn't seem like they're going to do it. It seems like they're going to go out and kind of get the cheaper players. And, you know, just a few minutes ago, as we started recording, you know, we saw that they've essentially had their bullpen addition invalidated because they lost a pitcher to a year-long suspension for PEDs. So they got Tyler Clippard, but now it's not like he's filling in for a guy who's now suspended. So, you know, that's already just been taken away. You know, I don't think that Juan Uribe, is as much as he is a fun guy to have around, you know, that's not going to change your team. Kelly Johnson's not going to change your team. I look at the Mets and I'm like, yo, go get Justin Upton. Just go do it, you know, or, you know, something like that. And it would help them. It would help them greatly. And I made the joke, and last week when we did the list of, you know, players who could get traded, that Cameron Maybin's like the kind of guy the Mets are going to go get. And like, I would not be surprised if they do that, but I just don't see how you're the Mets and you have this great pitching staff and you look at like what the Giants have been able to do with good pitching staff and not really a, you know, overwhelmingly strong offense, and they've won all these titles. Like, how do you look at that and say, hey, that's what we need to do? Like, we have an opportunity with our pitching staff to get into the postseason, make a run. Like, let's just you know, go after one of these pieces and make it happen, and they just seem so reluctant to do it.
I feel like there's a lot of different ways we could go here, but one of the more frustrating teams lately has been the Detroit Tigers. Seems like every day we're getting a new report on whether they're going to sell or not, and I just worry that we're getting way too deep into – they're just running out of time. I mean, you have to make a decision. Are you going to try and go for it in the AL Central, or are you going to start selling off pieces? I'm just worried that whatever decision they make is going to either be the wrong one or is going to happen way too late in the process. So that's probably – that's the most frustrating team to me now. But I also – I'm gonna hedge a little bit here.
Hedge away, man. Hedge away.
I see the case for both the Twins and the Cubs as well. Both have been really quiet thus far. And, you know, both with one pretty good move could, like the Mets, get themselves in a much better position. So I feel as though the Cubs will probably do something in the next couple days, just based on Theo Epstein's and Jed Hoyer's kind of history. I think they'll get something done.
Yeah, but if they just go and get like Ian Kennedy, though, you're going to be like, oh, man.
That's true. But I haven't heard the Twins involved for anything. No. And that's a team that's kind of been a surprise all year. When they called up some of their young guys, I kind of thought this is the signals that they're going for it. So I'd love to see them make, you know, maybe one or two moves that strengthen the club.
Yeah, no, good points. And I want to go back to the Tigers real quick, because one thing I wanted to say about them is I think – the Tigers, even if they decide to not trade their guys and not sell and just kind of keep it and go for it, which by all means, you know, do that. I do think as a whole, when we're talking about the week of the trade deadline and how much fun it is, like that's going to significantly, you know, take away some of the fun, because we're not going to have, you know, David Price out there and Cespedes. And so just from like a fan standpoint or from like a consumer standpoint, I think the whole week will be a lot more fun if the Tigers decide to sell. So, you know, we'll see. And I think it would add a definite like fun wrinkle if David Price is on the move yet again, you know, sort of as the clock ticks down in the final minutes of the trade deadline.
Yeah, for sure. And the AL, just in general, I mean, outside of Kansas City and the moves that they've made, it still seems pretty wide open to me. I mean, even if Baltimore made a huge move, suddenly they're scary, you know? So a lot of these teams can put themselves back in contention if a big move's made. I just don't know that that's going to happen.
All right. Well, that's our trade deadline talk. I know we each have one important question for each other. This is sort of a standoff thing. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I don't mind going first.
Yeah, I feel like you should go first. Mine is pretty intense.
Okay. My question is, since it's trade deadline week, if you were a Major League Baseball player, what city would you most want to be traded to?
City or team?
City.
Okay. Well, you know, most people would probably say like San Francisco or the Bay Area or something. But since I'm from the Bay Area, I would not pick that, just because I've been there a lot. Personally, I'd pick like New York, just because I feel like, you know, being on the West Coast, New York is sort of like the hub of stuff. And if not there, probably like DC. I don't know. I guess I have a little bit of East Coast like romance going on.
See, I'm gonna go with the city I live in right now. I'm gonna pick Seattle. There's
give
a lot.
Give Chris the key to the city.
There's
the
a lot
mayor
to
of
do.
Seattle, whoever you are.
I love the weather. I was just in the Midwest this weekend, and I just was reminded of the humidity. I'm like, no, I don't need that. So, I like the food. I like the atmosphere. I like the weather here. Seattle is where I would like to go, city wise.
I guess it depends on if I was a rental. Like if I was a rental, I'd probably be going to. Because maybe I don't want to be in New York year round, because I am kind of a West Coast guy. So maybe San Diego.
I considered San Diego as well.
Yeah, but it's expensive. It's really expensive to live there. But I guess it depends on how much money I'm making. If I'm a if I'm under a big contract, or if I'm a.
I think you're making a fair amount of money.
Okay, all right.
If you're a baseball player.
Hey man, you never know. You never know. So my question for you, Chris, and not at all involving baseball here. I took my kids to the San Francisco Zoo a couple weeks ago, and we were at the zoo. We were having lunch, eating the overly priced you know, zoo food.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting at our table, and there's a bunch of the seagulls around, like the same seagulls you see at the Giants game, right? So they come in, and they, like, swoop in and just will take people's food, right? We saw a guy, like, a seagull came in and just swooped in and took his whole burger and just took off. So we're sitting there, and a seagull comes in and grabs a piece of pizza off of somebody's plate. Now, the guy who was sitting there was not there. A person walking, seagull dropped the piece of pizza. A person walking by picked up the piece of pizza and put it back on the guy's plate, right?
Just oh.
And so who I'm the person I'm presuming is this guy's wife. It was a woman who was sitting with him. When the guy gets back, let's say that's you. Let's say you're the friend or the girl or whoever, and that's the person you're with. Do you tell them what happened?
Yes.
You're a nice
Without
person.
Without a doubt.
You're a nice person.
Because I don't want to – I would spend the $12 on another slice of pizza. I don't want to eat the pizza that the bird picked up and dropped on the ground.
What if it was like me, though? Would you like want me to eat a piece of it, and then you'd be like, hey, guess what happened to that pizza?
No, I'm not that mean.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm pretty mean, but I'm not that mean.
Is it mean that that's the first thing I thought of? Like, I wonder who wouldn't tell the other person. It's almost like a what would you do, you know, like, or the, you know, the ABC show, like the hidden camera show?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and see who wouldn't tell them, like, hey, man, a bird just came and, like, tried to steal your pizza and dropped it on the ground.
Oh, no way. I would have to tell. I would have to tell the person.
I didn't see whether he ended up eating it or not. We left, but I was watching it all play out in my head, and I thought, that's a good question for the podcast. What do you
think? Should have stuck around, man. Be a true journalist. Get the whole story.
Hey, man, my kids wanted to go play on that. My kids wanted to go play, so.
See the pandas.
Yeah.
I don't know all if right. you guys have pandas, but.
there were some pandas. There was a train. There was some gorillas. It was a lot of
course.
Fun. Yeah. No 100 pence. I was looking for 100 pence just walking around. Just
of course.
He wasn't.
Yes.
I did see the giraffes, though, so shout out to Brandon Belt on that one.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. This has been the Stew Pod. Lots of trade deadline talk and eating pizza off the ground. That's what we do around here.
You guys don't have to do that.
Yeah, and go and review us on iTunes. Rate and review, as we like to say. And you can leave us your pizza thoughts there.
That'd be great.
See you guys next week.